we representative decided that it was good to redo or continue, let's say, the alcohol and leaf bugs for a different time, maybe even next week. What I'm going to do is I'm gonna quickly review the beginning of what I said last week, and then try to the end. This week we're not rushing off any place. So I'll try to do my end in a different order to help make it, I hope, easier to understand. Okay. Let's go quickly. What we're gonna do is, if I'll help you understand the order of what we're gonna do. There are 6 steps to making an alcoholic beverage. That's what they have on the sheet in front of you. We're gonna go through those 6 steps. We did it more at length last time. We're gonna go through quickly through those 6 steps. Then we're gonna talk about 4 possible reasons to be mako about different chows. Without focusing on chows, we're gonna talk about 4 different reasons to be mako about specific chows that will come up. So then we're gonna put those 2 things together. We're gonna go back through the steps and go step by step and see what the chow is for each step, and which of these 4 possible stadim lahakka we have and how they apply to each one of those chows. Okay, as we go, we'll mention different types of alcoholic beverages. Maybe if we have time and we have some seder, we could at the end make some sense and talk about each person. We'll say gin is like this, and like, you know, go through product by product. Maybe we'll do that at the end. Okay. The 6 steps it takes to make an alcoholic beverage. First is you have to create a mash. You have to create a liquid that's water with some kind of a sugar in it. That sugar either comes from a direct sugar, like a fruit, or actual sugar cane, or it comes from, comes from a starch, which is broken down into its sugars, and then the sugars are made into this mash. The mash is then fermented, which is to say yeast acts on it to turn the sugar into alcohol. Okay, that can get the alcohol level up to in the area of 12, 13, 14, 15%, depending on what kind of yeast you're using, gets to that amount, at which point the yeast stops doing its trick. Then, in order to get the alcohol level, to get it more concentrated, you do something called distillation, which is you boil this liquid at a temperature in between the boiling point of alcohol and water. So the alcohol boils off, you capture those vapors, and you turn them back into liquid. So now you have a liquid that has a higher concentration of water, and you leave the water behind, or a lot of the water you leave behind in the original pot. Then, once we have this distilled product, which is a higher concentration alcohol, it's typically that's aged, put away in barrels or some kind of a container for X number of years to help develop the flavor. Now that you have a finished whiskey, when you're finished, if the aging, you have a finished whiskey, you take that whiskey. You don't usually sell it as is. Usually you mix it with other things. The most obvious thing you mix it with is other whiskeys to make exact other years or other varieties to make exactly the blend you want. But there are other things added in also, some of the flavors and blenders, some glycerin, some colors, different little things that might be added in at that point as they prepare the final product that they think exactly is what their customer wants or expects. And then the list is they bottle it and sell it to you in the store. Okay, so we have our 6 steps, which we ran through a little quickly, of the 6 steps that it takes to make whiskey. Okay, there are. I said whiskey, I meant there's alcoholic beverages. You see this little note on the bottom that not every alcoholic beverage goes through every one of these steps. Okay, I mentioned last week, vodka and gin don't get aged, and beer doesn't get distilled. Beer is actually watered down. Right? Beer is 5% alcohol, not 12% that it gets created at, so it gets watered down. And wine is also not distilled. Wine is just is usually sold as is, meaning that it's 12-13%. That's real wine is only 5%. Okay, so now there are 4 coolers, 4 studim, 4 reasons to possibly be mako about different chows we're going to hear about. Okay, not every one of these is going to apply to every case, but there are 4 things to think about. And you'll hear that 3 of them have to do with the fact that the most likely concern we have of tarfus getting into our alcoholic beverage, the most likely concern is stam yayin. Okay, stam yayin is if wine or grape juice was made and someone who's not Jewish touched it, that wine becomes usher. Unless it was mabushel, the wine can become usher. So stam yayin, that's an isser midrabanan. Stam Yain is the most likely, we'll see in a bunch of cases over here, that Stam Yain is the most likely concern in a bunch of different ways of getting into our things. So three of these clues are very specific to Stam Yain. Okay? And they are as follows. The first is that there's a Ramah. The Ramah says that when a person has a chashash that a food may have Issa Drabana mixed into it. The example he's talking about is a very practical example that we can understand. Pickles. A person has pickles. Pickles, the cucumber itself is kosher. But the cucumber is packed in vinegar. Okay, what is vinegar made out of? Vinegar is made out of alcohol. Okay, well, where does that alcohol come from? Surely in the times of the Ramah, it was very common that alcohol would come from wine. Okay, that's the simple way to make alcohol in those days, was from wine. You make if I back up a second, we said you take sugar, yeast, and yeast turns sugar into alcohol. Okay, well, there's another bacteria called Acetobacter, if that makes you feel good. Another bacteria that works on alcohol and turns it into vinegar. Okay, and that's, you know, from the Gemara, that if you leave your alcohol uncovered, then the Acetobacter gets into it and it could work on it to turn into vinegar. Okay, your alcohol, your wine, spoils and turns into vinegar. So the normal, a very common way in those days to make vinegar was from wine. It's not at all common nowadays. It's not so common nowadays. But in those days it was very common. So the Ramah's talking about, are you allowed to buy pickles in the store because you have to be choshish that the vinegar that they're packed in is vinegar that's made from wine alcohol. Okay, that he's talking about. Okay, now, the Gemara says you can't. Okay, the Gemara says you're not allowed to buy, you have to be choshish that it's made out of wine, that it's packed in wine vinegar. And the Ramah says that you are allowed to eat it. Okay, the Ramah says you're allowed to because of a din, which we call, he's toilin the drabonan. In very specific cases, okay, we're not going into details, but many of our cases are going to fit for the Ramah's rule. In many cases, if you have only a possibility that there's an Issa drabonan, then you're allowed to say, nah, it probably is not here. Probably they didn't use the Issa drabonan. We can assume they didn't use the Issa drabonan. Okay? Without going into details, you shouldn't go home and use this. Don't go buy pickles without a shkachanim. I'm not telling you to do that. But in specific cases, we're going to hear, we'll go through the six steps, we'll see where we might, the Ramah's kula applies in very many cases. Well, the Ramah says it applies in many cases. As you heard, but I said to you, the Gemara says, you're not allowed to buy that exact case about buying pickles, the Gemara says you're not allowed to do. And it's a big question in the Rishonim, exactly what case the Gemara talks about. The Ramah's taking a kula de kashita. The Ramah is being makel to say that in a lot of cases you could be toilet, but the Shulchan Aruch doesn't hold of it, and the Rashba doesn't hold of it. There's many people who don't hold of what the Ramah says. Okay, so Ramah says about this and about the second kula, that a Baal Nefesh, a person who's more particular about what he does, will not be samech on this Ramah by itself. Okay, a Baal Nefesh, Ramah says he himself would not drink based on that kula and on the next kula that's coming, because Ramah doesn't say why, but the reason is because there are many who do not hold to what the Ramah says. Okay, and they go like the simple reading of the Gemara, which is that you cannot buy these pickles and assume that they're not using wine vinegar. Okay, but we're going to see that, as you can imagine, it's going to come up a lot of times. Should we think about? I'll just give an example. Should we be concerned that there's Stam Yain was mixed into my alcohol? Should I be concerned about that? The Ramah would say, don't worry about that. Probably you don't have to be concerned that they did that.
Maybe the Ramah's head there is that 1,700 years or so, whatever it was, 1,200 years after the Gemara was written, people may think differently than the time.
No, it's not because he's not writing it. You could be correct today. We might say nowadays that almost all the vinegar in the United States is made out of corn. So we might say on our own that Gemara's chashash is not such a chashash nowadays. People who make wine vinegar sell it as special wine vinegar. They don't use it to make pickles. People don't make pickles with wine. We might say that. I'm not saying it's wrong. That we might consider such a thing. The Ramah's not talking like that. The Ramah's reason is because he paskins like an Isav Heter who understands the Gemara a certain way. It has to do with how he understands the Gemara, not because in his days wine vinegar was more or less popular. Again, we could say that. We today might be able to say that if you buy pickles made in America, it's one thing, and if you buy pickles made in Europe, it might be different. And so we could, with our understanding of how the world market, we might say that. I'm saying I'm not discounting that idea, but that's not what Ramah is saying at all. He's passing like that Issa Heter. He's going Pshat and Hadar in the Gemara. It's not that kind of a thing. Okay. The second, so that was one possible kula. Again, we're going to take these four kulas and try to apply them to our six steps that we had over here. A second possible kula is that there's a special rule for Stam Yayin, which is that whereas most Isurim are brought to Rishishim, You have to have 60 times the amount to be mbatl. You have to have so much ether to the point that you don't even taste the iser, right? You don't even taste it anymore. It's so diluted. For wine, there's no such rule. For wine, when you want to be mbatl stam yayin, you only have to be mbatl within 6 times its volume. That is to say, if you take a simple case that we all come across, which is you take a little bit of grape juice and you pour it into water. You want to have a drink of water with a little flavor. So when you take about seltzer, you put a drop of grape juice into it, and you put in, and it has 10 parts water for every part of grape juice. Okay, there's 10 times as much water as grape juice. Does it taste like grape juice? Of course it does. That's why you put it in. Until shishim, it'll probably taste like, well, close to shishim, it'll taste like that. The din is, you make a shahakal on that food. Because wine and grape juice products are bottled in 6. After, when there's 10 times as much water as there is grape juice, you make a shahak on that drink, even though it tastes like grape juice. Okay? Because grape juice, grape and wine is buckling in 6 times. What's the reason for why that happens is because wine has a certain chashivus to it, a certain character to it that makes it different than other liquids. It has a special character. Once you get diluted beyond a certain point, it stops being wine. It's just a fruity drink for which we make a shahak on. Let's say orange juice. Okay, the Gemara says juice from an orange is just zayabiyama, just a tasty liquid water. You only make a shahakal on it. You don't make a ha'etz on that. Okay, you make a shahakal on it. Wine has a special chashivas to it because it comes from grapes. You make a special bracha and it has special halachas like stam yayin is also. Once you get it diluted beyond a certain point, it doesn't have that character anymore of being wine, and it not only it loses its special bracha, and it loses the din that were associated with it. Okay, the din over here was that stam yayin is aser. Once it gets diluted past a certain point, it loses that special character. That is to say, again, even though it tastes like that stuff, it still is bottled b'shisha. Okay, again, we'll see that plays into a number of the shilas here, whether something is made out of stam yayin. This will play in as a possible clue. But Rav Moshe has, I think it's 5 or 6 reasons to possibly not say bittul b'shisha in the cases we're going to talk about. Okay? Now I want to tell you, I'm not going to tell you all his reasons. Okay? We could do that. We will stay one night, all Shavuos night, we'll stay up all night, and we'll talk about all the 6 reasons and Ramesh and other things. We'll do that at a different time. But Ramesh has 5 or 6 reasons, but I have to tell you something. For every one of the reasons Ramesh says, you might think that it shouldn't be bittul b'shisha for this reason. I'll give you an example. You might think it's not bittul b'shisha because some achronim hold that rule of bittul b'shisha is only into water, but not true if the bittul b'shisha is into other liquids. Bittul b'shisha is only into water, not into other liquids. Such a sheet does not bring them to say like that. Ramesh says, but it's not true. That's not the din. That's not correct. That's not what we hold. So for each one of his 6 reasons, 5 or 6 reasons, Ramesh says, that side is not correct. But he says, after hearing all these different studies, there are all these reasons why it might not be bittul b'shisha, he says, a Baal Nefesh should rather not do that. Okay, a Baal Nefesh in this case should not be soimach that it's bottle b'shisha. Okay, so again, we have a case where it's mutter bin hadin. As I mentioned last week, Ramosha said if somebody would offer him a drink, someone would say, come l'chayim him by a kiddush, Ramosha said he would drink it. Because in din he held that it was mutter. So he thought it was too showy for the guy to say, you drink that, I'll stick with Pepsi. I don't drink that stuff. I don't hold it. So he held it with b'shem. You are right, he wouldn't drink it. But in hadin he held that it was mutter. But on his own, he wouldn't drink it. He would not make his own, that's what he writes in the Shuvah, he wouldn't drink it as a choice, because they're starting to say that it's not bottle b'shisha. Okay? Okay, so we have 2 reasons. We have first a Ramah that says, in general, we're not choishish for Isha's Rabbanon. In many cases, we're not choishish that Isha's Rabbanon maybe is there. We have a second thing, which is that Stam Yayin could be bottle b'shisha. It's a special din for Stam Yayin. The first din applies to all Isha's Rabbanon, the first clue. The second one only applies for Stam Yayin. Okay, the third is another unique din to Stam Yayin. I can't say it's unique to Stam Yayin, but it is like this. I'll tell you what it is. There's a rule that if I mix 2 things together, let's say I mix, I'll use the case I used before. Let's say I take wine that's not kosher, and I mix it into my seltzer. Okay? But I do this time 50-50. I put 50% seltzer, 50% wine. What's the din of that drink? And the wine is treif. What's the din? Treif. Well, I gave a bad case. Let's say that it's 60% water, 40% wine. What would be the din? The din is that it's treif. Why? Because it's not bottle b'shisha, it gives time, everything, and it's treif. Why don't I say that the wine is bottle b'roif? For most dini ha'terah, things are bottle b'roif. When there's more heter than iser, it's Svata Brayv, and it becomes mutter. Why don't I say that? Why doesn't it become Svata Brayv? There's more water than there is wine, so the wine is Svata. Why don't I say that? Someone's got to know.
Because it was
Bemezit. So Bemezit is that Midrabanon, if I move some Vata something on purpose, then there's a class that it'll be usher to me. Okay, so you're right. Okay, let's put that on the side, because in our cases, we're not going to be negated to, not going to be cases of where someone's doing it on purpose. They're doing it because they want to make whatever their food. But your second thing is that it gives time into it. It gives food, it gives taste into the food. There's a special din for things that have to do with taste, that they're usher when they give taste, even if they're bought the baroiv. For most in the Hatara, most things are bought the baroiv. If there's some mutter and some usher, you follow the roiv, whatever the roiv is.
It's bought the b'shishim, then there's no sintam relevant? Or?
What bought the b'shishim means is that it doesn't give taste. There's so little of it that it doesn't give taste.
What if it does?
We're gonna get, that's going to be our fourth. We're going to cut that in a second. Okay? But as a rule, when it's bought the b'shishim means that it doesn't give taste anymore. So it's bought, even in food kind of things, it's bought.
What about bought the b'shisha with the grape juice?
So Bata Mishisha was a special exception that even though it gives taste, we disintegrated the wine. The wine became not wine anymore. It became just like a fruity taste, which is not us.
So if it was Sam Yain, Bata Mishisha, then it's totally fine?
Yes, that's good. That's good.
So you could really take trafe wine and pour it in with five parts water and drink it?
No, you can't, because as he said, you're not allowed to mivatel anything. You're not allowed to put even a little bit of chazer into your chalent, even though it's going to be bottled. You're not allowed to do it, and if you did it, it would be awesome. You wouldn't be allowed to eat it. But you took it, if someone did it, would it be mutter? Then it would be, if it's bottled, mutter.
But you're at a party, and they have a huge, big silver bowl filled with punch, mm-hmm. and they show you all the juice to have asher. Oh, but we use this one drink, wine or grape juice, and it doesn't, but it's only, they show you it's this much, it's this big thing.
But so then you ask the shiloh. Okay, you should ask yourself whether you should or should not drink that. Questions about whether that falls into the rules of bitul l'chatchila or not bitul l'chatchila. I'm not. But in din, in the theoretical din, I'm not saying you should go drink it. Theoretical din, yes. Bottle is bottle. If it's bottle, you let it. Okay, if you let it happens often enough. But how many people? It has to do with who's at the party. Well, I'm going to put that on the side. When you have that child, you ask the other side, say, I'm going to the party, this is what they did. Or you call, you go outside and you say, hi, I'm at the party and I really want to drink this stuff. And you ask the child. Okay. But how many people here have ever called up with a child and said, by mistake, we did this and this and this, now what do I do? And the answer, in some cases, is it's bottle. Okay, you're allowed to eat it, it's bottle. Okay. So, but the rule is, when the reason why things are usher in foods could be also told, let's say shishim, is because they give a taste into it. But there's an exception. If the taste that they give is lefkam, if the taste that they give hurts the food, then it can be bottle. Because we say it's not contributing any taste to the food, it's actually making the food taste worse. So if it makes the food taste worse, then it goes back to the regular rules of rakata or rakula, the things are bottle brought. Okay, so there's a rule which is called mersentam lefkam, which you and Moram is at. Mersentam lefkam, which is that if the isser gives a bad taste into the food, then it's bottled with the regular rules, meaning it's bottled baroif. Okay, one example of that is that I'm sure that if you ever guess the shayla, you know, I picked up a milk spoon and I put it into the flesh of the pot and all kinds of cases. One of the questions that you get asked is the kli ein ben yomei? Has it been used in the past 24 hours? If it hasn't been used, let's say, for fleshiks in the past 24 hours, then in lots of cases, your food's going to be mutter. Why? Because the flavor that's absorbed into your spoon at this point gives a bad taste into your milchik food. So since it gives a bad taste into your milchik food, we don't have to follow the rules of shishim. We don't have to follow the rules of nice and time. We just say, if it's bought the bread, it's fine. Okay? So now, within this, okay, so that's a rule in all food that something that's nice time of gam is mutter. The Gemara says a very interesting rule. Okay, the Gemara says that if you have wine or grape juice that falls into a food, it could give a good taste. But if you have an absorbed taste, a blia of stam yayin that gets into food, that is always lefkam. Okay, and look, if I pour wine. In his case, we pour wine into the punch, that makes the punch taste good. If the bowl that they were using had yesterday been used for wine, and had bleas of wine inside of it, and now those bleas come into the punch, those bleas are lefkam. The bliyas of Stam Yayin are lefkamin to everything other than other wine or grape juice. Okay, if it goes into any other liquids, the Gemara says you could use, this is the Gemara's case, you could use wine barrels to hold other liquids because any bliyas that come down are lefkamin to those liquids. Okay? So this...
That's just by definition.
So the Gemara is giving us an example, in other words, which is, there's a rule all over the place that next time of Gam is mutter, next time of Gam can be batel b'roid, and the Gemara is giving us an example that, and telling us that bliyas of Stam Yayin are always left Gam into other things.
Even to other wine?
Not into other wine. No, not into other wine or grape juice, but yes, into other liquids. Okay? So the Gemara is saying us, it's an example in the sense of, it's something that's a practical piece of advice. This is not a halachah l'moshe m'Sinai. This is not a din. This is a practical piece of advice. It's like there were people who argued that there's a question whether you should be concerned that if you don't drink Chol V'Yisrael and you want to buy just plain milk, you go into the supermarket and you want to buy milk, it's not Chol V'Yisrael, it's just milk. It has some vitamins. Okay, we'll ignore the vitamins for now, but basically it's just plain milk. If you don't drink Chol V'Yisrael, it should be kosher. One of the questions on buying that milk is, well, it's pasteurized before they put it into the bottle. Which is to say, it's heated to kill bacteria before they put it into the bottle. So there's a possibility that pasteurization equipment was used for other things. It might have been used for other things that would not be kosher. Okay? So there was a debate, this is many years ago, as to whether, well, maybe all those things that would be used on the equipment would be lefkam. Okay, and one of the examples is orange juice would be pasteurized. Is pasteurized very similar to the way that milk is. Orange juice would be lefkam into milk because just that's a practical piece of information. Does the taste of orange juice mixed into milk, does that, most people say, no, it's not good. That doesn't taste good. Chances are it's not going to taste good. So that, if, let's say that would be true, that we're not here to talk about that, that would be a practical piece of information. It's not a din. It's just a practical application of a din. We have a din that knows Talmud Kamas Mutter. That's a practical application. So the Gemara is saying that the bliyas of Stam Yayin are practically don't taste good into other things. Okay, we'll see how that plays out into some of the cases we have over here, and how it plays out in some examples and in some metzias. Okay, because the metzias of food changed after the times of the Gemara. You'll hear in a second. Okay, very much again, things have changed since the time of the Gemara. Okay, last is. There's another rule. This has nothing to do with Stam Yayin. It's a regular rule that we've mentioned. I already actually even said it, which is that food could be bought to b'shishim. Okay, food that is, if there's more than 60 times heter to the little bit of issa that I have in my food, it's bottled. It's as if it doesn't exist anymore, and you could eat the food. But within that rule, there's an exception that she mentioned, which is that if the thing that was traced is avidal taima, the thing that was traced is there, gives taste beyond its strength, like a spice. Okay, spices give taste much more than 60 times how much there are, but how much black pepper do you put into food? Right? How much of other spices would you put into something? They give a very strong amount of taste. They're concentrated and they give a lot of taste. So they're not bottle b'shishim. They're not bottle until they stop giving time. They might not be bottle until 100 times or 500 times or 5,000 times, depending on how strong they are, until they stop giving time, they're bottle. So, we will see that some of the shilas that we have over here are things that they are put in small amounts, and depending on whether they're bata b'shishim or whether avidul taima, which is going to for us be two halves of the size of the coin, they will or will not be mutter. Okay, so I'm going to go over shortly, quickly. We have our four possible kulos to apply to our cases over here, which are the Rambam says when we have an issur d'rabbanan. Most prominently, Stam Yayin. We'll see another Issur d'Rabbanan. Also, we have Issur d'Rabbanan, and we don't know if it exists in our food. Under the right conditions, we can say that Issur d'Rabbanan does not exist. Okay, we can pretend. We assume that it's not there, and you'd be allowed to eat the food. Second is that there's a rule of bittul b'shisha that when wine or grape juice gets diluted into six parts, it loses its isurim to it, and it loses its bracha, it loses everything. It becomes as if there's no wine in there. And in which case the food would become mutter. Third was that bliyas of Stam Yayin are lefkam, not Stam Yayin itself, but the bliyas of Stam Yayin, the absorbed taste of Stam Yayin is lefkam into other foods. And lastly is that at times we'll even be able to say bittul b'shishim, that we could dilute another isser, which is not Stam Yayin, another isser b'shishim. Okay, before we go on, everybody here with me still? Everybody okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's go to our to our six steps over here. You have a question? Okay. Our six steps over here. First step was, you made a mash. First step was you made some kind of a sugary mash, is a very good word for it. Just a big mush of sugar and water ready to become fermented. Okay? If that mash came from grape juice, okay, came from, which is a common, is a reasonably common source to get it from, then things are going to be treif. So let's say if my finished product is brandy, my finished product is vermouth, my finished product is wine, okay? So then, of course, it's usher. The mash was made from stam yayin, and of course, the finished product that I'm going to make is going to be usher. There's nothing to talk about. It is stam yayin. That's all it is. What happens if I know what a different thing that it's made from? Let's say I have rum. What do you make rum out of? Rum is made out of sugar. Okay, the source thing is cane sugar. That's how you make rum. You start off with cane sugar. Let's say I make bourbon where at least 51% of it has to be corn. Okay, the original mash has to be corn. So if the original mash has to be corn, I say, okay, so then I should be okay. From my mash perspective, that has to be corn. Well, the question is, should I be choshish that there's also stam yayin in the mash? Okay, that even though it was mentioned this week, I went to look up the regulations if anybody wants to read them. I printed out one page of them, two pages from them. Bourbon has to be 51% corn, but it could be 49% anything else. Okay, each type of whiskey has a standard of identity, meaning the government says if you want to call something, if you want to call it blended bourbon, it has this rules. If you want to call it a blend of bourbon whiskeys, it has these rules. Okay, the government has very specific rules as to how what you call something. So first of all, when you look at the bottle, you have to know what you're looking at. You know, you have to really read carefully because a change of word here and there means a very different thing. Okay, but the mash potentially could contain other things. Okay, so do I have to be chayshish that it contains other things? Okay, so the first thing is you have to understand the industry. Okay, people who make bourbon really basically just use corn. Okay, nothing to do with what the government says. They basically just use corn. There's loads of corn in America. That's what you make bourbon out of. Blah blah blah. That's what you make it out of. People who make beer usually use barley. You know, people who make beer also use rice and corn, depending on what they're trying to do. Especially nowadays. Nowadays that there's such a thing as specialty beer. Microbreweries. There we go. The microbreweries who are trying to distinguish themselves from the big boys. Okay, they're trying to make something unique. They do unusual things. Like, I just heard about a company that makes their beer. They smoke their barley before they turn it into a mash. Okay, because they think it gives it a special taste. And they smoke it in a smokehouse. They wanted to smoke it at a company that makes pork and fish and all kinds of great trade things. Okay, and they were on the hashgacha, so the hashgacha didn't let them do that. Okay, but that was their mishagas and how they thought they were going to make a better, their beer was going to taste different. Then why would you buy my beer instead of buying Miller? And the reason is because, I have some special way that I make it taste because I do whatever. Okay, they do unusual things to do it. Okay, so can one of those people put in wine into their mish? Yeah, they could. They could put in grape juice. Okay, you have to check. I didn't read that far to find out with the beer what the standard of identity, if you're allowed to put one, but potentially you could. You're allowed. There's a lot of leeway. There's certain rules, but there's a lot of leeway. So should you be choshish that putting in these other things? Okay, so first is that on a practical level, chances are that there's not stam yayin in a regular mash. Okay, that's the simple assumption is that there would not be. But, and as sort of like an example of that is we have the Rama. The first clue that we have, which is the Rama says, if in cases, and this is an example of what the Rama would apply to, we could say is we'll be toiler that there's no issa drabanan in here. We don't have to be concerned that maybe this grape juice mixed into it. Okay, over here, we're more comfortable being samech on the Rama because Lamais is, on a practical level, we don't know people making rye whiskey that are also throwing in grape juice into it also. Doesn't exactly go, doesn't fit into the trend of how the industry works. Again, I'm not telling you that you can't be, okay, but we have, the Rama says, don't be choshish for those things. So even though Rama says, balnefesh should be makbid, over here, where we know the industry doesn't really do that, we feel more comfortable being samech on it.
So this becomes a completely subjective issue, though. If the trend were to change,
of course. Until maybe a month ago, I had never heard of somebody smoking their barley before they made beer. Okay? That is so, but just because there's one Meshuggah doing it doesn't mean that you have to be worried about it yet. But things change. Things go, you know, people have their own ways of doing things. Okay? You have a question? No, okay. So that just, it depends on what you're doing. But again, don't lose track, don't lose sight of the fact that some people tell you straight out that they're using wine. Okay? I mentioned these vodkas that are made that say on a vodka, it has to say by law what the source of the sugar is. Okay? What it is like this. Vodka, I'll repeat it. Vodka is made when you do distillation. Usually you distill till 40, 50, 60, 70% strength to make your whiskey. Okay, vodka means that you distilled it till 95% purity. That's as pure as you can get. You get 95% pure, and then you just water it down afterwards. Okay? And it's called grain neutral because it doesn't taste like anything. They've distilled out all the taste, all the unique taste, I don't mean the taste, all the unique taste of the source of the alcohol, and it just tastes like alcohol. That's all it is, it's just alcohol. It's just alcohol, and then they dilute it with water. So, on a bottle of vodka, by law, it has to say where it comes from. And it's often hidden, but it says that there's someplace what it's made out of. And some of them are very proud of the fact that they make it out of grapes. Okay? And to their mind, they're giving you a better product, or you'll want to buy this, or other people say they made it out of milk. They're not really making it out of milk, they're making it out of something called lactose, but they'll tell you straight out that it's made out of this thing, which is this. Okay, well then obviously you can't drink that. That's, I don't have to tell you that. If it says, I'm making out of grape juice, I shouldn't drink that. I can't say the wrong law says, I don't have to be cautious. You know, you can't be blind. It says on the bottle, made out of, you know, okay. So in a mash, we're not so concerned that the mashes are pretty straightforward. There are enzymes using them, but we're going to ignore the enzymes because the enzymes are almost always kosher. Okay. Next step is, they ferment it. You take the mash and we ferment it. Yes, go ahead.
On your end, how many enzymes do you have to know about?
How many enzymes do you have to use? The most common enzyme you use is barley beta amylase. Okay, the standard enzyme is, it's hard to call that source being an enzyme. What they do is like this. Just I'll stop for a second. It's absolutely nifloys. How about you? You have to just use this. You have barley in your tongue? Okay, well, the barley that you have in your trunk is missing part of its shell. But if you have a real grain of barley, okay, that little thing, it's about the same size as the barley in your trunk, is basically all starch. Okay, it's basically all starch. And that's why does it make that? He didn't make it, I guess he made it for trunk, but the official reason of why there is barley is because so that you could plant it again. It's a seed that you could grow more barley. Okay? So in that big bowl of starch is a little bit of germ, okay, which is the thing that could grow, that tells it to grow. So what happens is, when the barley gets into the right conditions, means it's warm and there's water, and whatever the conditions are right, the germ wakes up and says, okay, time to start growing. Okay? So the barley, that starch that's there, is the food to keep the germ going until it can get a root and a leaf. Once it gets a root and a leaf, and now it has its own nutrition source and it can start growing into the full plant. Okay? There's only one little problem. No germ can digest starch. It can't, even you can't digest starch. Even we can't, if you put starch into someone's blood, they couldn't get anything out of it. Maybe we'll clog their arteries. They can't gain anything. You can only use in your body for energy sugar. You can't use starch. Starch has thousands of sugars. You can't use starches. You can only use sugar to give yourself energy. So what happens is when the barley plant is sitting there in the right conditions, That tiny little thing says, time to grow. It creates an enzyme. That silly little thing makes an enzyme called barley beta amylase. That enzyme breaks down the starch that's all around it, turns the starch into sugar, so that the little germ can eat the sugar that's in that starch. Then it grows a root down and a leaf up, and now it's a business that starts to grow. Okay, so that little thing, you've got thousands of them in your trunk, that little thing is able to create an enzyme, its own enzyme, which then breaks down the starch and gets itself rolling to start growing. Okay, it's absolutely amazing. Okay, if you think about it, it's like wild that little thing can do that. Anyhow, so what happened is that enzyme doesn't only break down starch of barley plants; it can break down any starch. Okay, that enzyme is called barley beta amylase. Okay, or malt syrup. What they do is like this: they put barley seeds into water. The barley says, oh, time to grow, and they start to grow, and then the mean barley producers, malt producers, kill the barley. Okay? So what the barley does is it produces its enzyme, it makes this enzyme, ready to start growing, they kill the barley. They say, never, sorry, have a nice day. And then they take the enzyme. It's a very valuable enzyme. In other words, listen to what I'm saying. Okay. The scientists, it's easier to get the barley to make the enzyme than for them to figure out how to do it in the lab. Okay. That little barley can do a better job than it's easier for it to do it than to do it in the lab. Okay, the little barley. So they say they throw a bunch of barley, it's called steeping it, they put it into water.
It's not there before.
It makes the enzyme. It's not in there. No, if it was in there, they would just take it out, so to speak. It doesn't. It creates the enzyme. And it has enough energy to make an enzyme, and then it starts eating itself. So to speak, it eats the shell that it's in. So they steep it, I mean they put it into water, it makes this enzyme, and then they harvest that enzyme from it, and they use it. Another, just for your curiosity, another way of using it is they sometimes let it go a little further. They let the enzyme actually work on the barley, work on the starch, and it creates sugar. Well, that sugar is very sweet. It has a very good taste to it. When it works on it, it turns starch, which is bland, into something sweet. And then they stop the process at that point. That's called malted barley, or barley syrup. You find that in pretzels and cereals. That's it, because it's a very sweet taste. They use that as a sweetener in foods. You see it in cereal, again, in pretzels, in different places you'll find it. It's a sweetener that's used because, again, they stop the process a little bit further after it's already broken down the starch, and they use that sweet sugar. But anyway, so you guess what enzymes, the traditional way to make whiskey is to steep barley and actually make barley beta amylase. Okay? There are artificial ways of doing it. You could create microbial barley beta amylase. Some people use alpha amylase. Each one does its own little thing, but almost all of those enzymes are kosher. In the world, there aren't that many people making alpha amylase. This is not like, this is not guys making a mom and pop shop. So there's not that many of them, and they're just all that old kosher. Okay, so it's not such a chash that maybe the enzyme is kosher.
Since you mentioned
straight from me.
Since you mentioned malt, how do you define a single malt?
Okay, that word single malt has nothing. Well, it relates to this only in a very specific way. What it means is that scotch is made out of barley. That is to say, they don't just use barley as their enzyme. They actually let the barley turn into sugar, and then that's their mash is made out of malt. I mean, their mash is made out of, it's not made out of corn, it's not made out of apricots, it's made out of barley. That's the mash, the sugar in the mash is made from barley, so so it's a malt beverage because it's made out of, the sugar source was malt. It was turned out, the single of it is a different child, we'll get that later. Okay, why it's called single malt. But single malt doesn't mean we made out of, the malt is the description of the beverage. It's like saying rum is made out of sugar, scotch is made out of malt because it's made out of barley. That's how you make it. Okay. It's like a beer is also made out of malted barley, but it's other things. Anyway, okay. Back to where you were.
Malt only comes from barley?
Right. Malt is by definition comes from barley.
And this enzyme only comes from barley? Wheat doesn't make such an enzyme also?
Of course it does. Well, of course it does. Wheat has to grow also. Right. What do you think? Only barley has to grow? Everybody's got to grow. But for whatever reason, either from traditional, maybe it's easier to get it off of it. I'm not sure what the reason why people stick with the barley. Maybe it does a better job and it tastes good. I have no idea. But that's what people use. They collect the beta amylase from barley. That's the traditional way to do it.
But they could collect beta amylase from wheat.
I'm not a scientist to tell you, but it has to produce, I don't know if it produces beta amylase, it has to produce amylase. Amylase is an enzyme that breaks down starch. It has to do it or else the wheat wouldn't grow.
Right.
That's why it has the starch, just to help it grow. You know what I mean? It's like this. A cherry pit grows with the sugar around it because it's got sugar to help it grow. The fruit, it has sugar in it. So it has what to grow from because it has sugar there. But starch doesn't have any sugar in it. How's the corn going to grow? Where's the sugar going to come from? So it has to start. It has to break down that starch to turn into sugar so that it can start growing. Okay. So now, back to where we were. So our mash, we're sort of assuming that the mash come from kosher sources, unless we know otherwise. The fermentation is done by putting yeast into the mash to ferment it. Most yeast is, again, not kosher. In the bigger picture over here, we're ignoring the yeast and the enzyme. It's sort of like, if we can get through the other shilas and you're willing to be makel about the other shilas, then you probably don't want to care about the yeast and the enzyme. What I mean is, if you went, I told this on the last week, if you went to Kol Tov, I would tell you to buy yeast with a hasher on it. Okay? But if you're willing to get through all the other shilas and you're willing to drink it anyhow, then yeast is not the biggest of your problems. Okay. So then, our third step, we're up to distillation. We now have a liquid, which is, let's say, for argument's sake, 12% alcohol and 88% 88%, okay, right? 88% everything else, water, okay, 87% water and a 1% other flavoring things that have developed in the food. And we have this stuff here, and we want to distill it. We want to make it into a higher concentration of alcohol. What we do is we boil it at a temperature that lets the alcohol rise out and leave the other liquids behind. Typically, this is done in a very small batch process. Okay? It's done in a machine called a still, as in distillation. Okay? It's done in a still, and it's usually done in batches. That still could be used to distill anything. Okay? Now, there's distillation units for all different kinds of materials. In industry, there's different kinds, but when we're focusing just on distillation of alcoholic beverages, it's very focused, meaning to say it can boil, let's say, between 173 and 212. Let's say it picks 180 degrees, it's like right a certain amount, and it's built for alcohol. It's built for distilling alcohol. Well, that also could be used to distill, you guessed it, Stamyayin. Okay, if I want to make brandy, how do I make brandy? I take wine, and then I distill the alcohol off to make it a concentrated wine, which we call brandy. Okay, if I want to make port wine, I have to distill off a certain amount of brandy. I mix it back into my wine to make a port wine. Okay, I want to make vermouth. Again, all these things are using this.
You have the option to put it back in.
What you're doing is you boil it out. You boil out the alcohol, and you catch those vapors and turn them back into liquids. And then that liquid is, let's say, going to be, you do it a couple of times until it's 60% alcohol. Okay, if you want to make port wine, you take that and mix it into a different wine. You don't mix it back into itself. You're wasting your time. You're pouring it back in. You take another bottle of wine and you put in the other one to make
the company's wine.
Yeah, what was your question?
Companies that are making brandy, are making rum also, and whiskey and all that, are making
brandy. So that's a very good point. That's a good point. Good.
But each company is making its own
thing. So that's where I'm headed. That's exactly where I'm heading to. As a rule, people who are making brandy, that is to say wine, alcohol, probably are not going to be making bourbon. Just so the way the industry works, it's sort of the people who make whiskeys that are not fruit-based and the people who make it fruit-based are sort of separated. There's like two different industries. But the people who make brandy might be making peach whiskey. They might be making Slivovitz at a plum whiskey. They might be using other fruits to be making a whiskey. The fruit brandies, as they're called. Okay, a fruit brandy means that the source of your sugar was some kind of a fruit. You didn't have to break down the starch. You used the fruit to start with. You started with apricots or cherry, anything. Any of these things, those people might be using the same equipment as
they
make brandy.
They also made brandy with wine.
Right, they made brandy with one fruit was a grape, they made brandy, and then they used peaches to make peach brandy or something else like that. Okay, that's not so unusual. Okay? So here we have a question. Here we have a question like this. Let's see, does the Ramah, should we apply the Ramah to this case? The Ramah says, if we have a chash that maybe there's Issa Drabanan, in our case, maybe the kelim we use for Issa Drabanan, the Ramah says you could be titled. Okay, so the Ramah would say you could be titled that there's no Issa Drabanan. The person wants to eat his slivovitz, okay, it's made from plums, he wants to eat it, he could be titled that there's no Issa Drabanan, that they did not use the same kelim for Stam Yayin. Okay, Ramah says, it's better to not be saying
but
it did.
They don't make a great point.
Grape what?
A grape, whatever.
Brandy. That's called brandy. That's plain brandy. Right, they do. The guys make, you'd be assuming that the guy who makes slivovitz is not making grape brandy. You don't know. If you knew, you knew. But if you didn't know, the Ramah says, you in rights, in certain situations, you would be able to be toiler.
But since there's nowhere slivovitz is, it's a factory you go to, it's not a question that has to be up in the air.
A slivovitz is not a brand name. It's a description of a type of thing. Plum brandy. So if you're a specific company, and you call them and say, guys, do you guys make grape brandy? And they tell you, yeah, we do, then you're in trouble. And then you say, no, I can't be, how can I be? You're right. So it's worth making a phone call or looking on their website or go to the store and seeing, does the same company make that kind of thing? Well, that's true. But without any knowledge, the potential could be totally up the door. Okay, now the next thing.
Just because you don't know doesn't mean you can still find out.
So if
that,
you...
Why should that be a hint?
Masculine. If you could find out...
Nowadays, it's very easy to find out information.
Okay. If you think so, I'm not arguing with you. If you believe that it's easy to find out, if it's reasonably easy, yes, you should find out. Okay. It's questionable if you should be semichan or ramah in this case altogether. So, and then you really could, but if you could find out, even the ramah would tell you, yes, you should find out. Okay. The ramah was buying pickles. He was just standing in the supermarket in Krakow. There was no way to find out. He didn't have the internet, as far as we know. But you're right, he couldn't find out. But if you could find out, then yeah, you could find out. Okay. Our next thing is, should we say it's batel b'shisha? Should we say that the blias of Stam Yayin are going to be batel b'shisha? Okay. My vote in this case is to say no, because the stills, without getting into it, stills are very, have a lot of material inside of them. Can we say it? Okay. There's something called packing inside of a still. Loads and loads of surface area. That's how stills work. They have a lot of surface area. I don't know if we could say that it's batel b'shisha. There's a lot of residue. No, my question is, the amount of absorbed taste that's in there is, there's a lot of absorbed taste. If I made brandy today, the bleas that are in there's a lot to come out into my thing, maybe not even to be batel b'shisha. I'm not sure. But now the question is, should we say that the bleas are lefkam? Okay, our third kulu was, all bleas of stam yayin are lefkam into other foods. Remember I told you that? All bleas of stam yayin are lefkam into other foods. So I should say, So the bleas of yayin are lefkam. So any, we're talking about bleas. We're not talking about brandy being in it. We're talking about that they used the still for brandy, and now they're using it to make my apricot whiskey. So should I say the bleas are always lefkam? Okay? So for this, we have to remember, this is what I said about a piece of history over here. Okay? In the times of the Gemara, there was no such thing as whiskey. Okay? The idea of how to make, how to distill and create what we call whiskey, like a higher alcohol beverages, to the best of our knowledge, did not exist at the times of the Gemara. Okay? It was created or invented or discovered 1,200 years ago. Okay? And we have Chuvas in the Rivash, which is maybe, I don't know, 800 years ago. You guys will correct me when the Rivash lived. But afterwards, there were shilas that came up about this. But it surely wasn't common to make these distilled beverages in the times of the Gemara. The Gemara was written 1,500 years ago. Okay? They didn't make those kind of things. So now, the Gemara said that the bleas of stam yayin are lefkam into all foods, into other liquids. That was not a halacha l'mashmi sinai. My understanding. My understanding of the Gemara is, it's a practical piece of information. They understood bleas. Bleas meant something to them. Okay, we have a hard time understanding what a blea is. But they understood what bleas were, and they were telling us a piece of information. Bleas of stam yayin, something happens to them, I don't know what, but there's something to them that they don't give a good taste into other liquids. They don't give a taste in other liquids. They were dealing with a piece of a practical situation that they had, which was, they had stam yayin, they had grape juice and wine that had been absorbed, and they knew what it did to other foods. They never had brandy that was absorbed into a kli, because it didn't exist. They also didn't have pH alcohol to see how the bleed comes into that thing, to know how would it be affected by that thing. So it's not, we're not saying something bad about those people. They didn't have it. So the rule that they made doesn't really apply to our case over here, because they didn't have the situation that we're using, we're applying them to a case. What I mean is like this.
Why is it different?
What is it like this?
What's the difference of the blea of the wine or the blea of the...
It's a good question. I was about to say that. If they didn't have, mango juice, okay? In those times, they probably no one was squeezing and making mango juice or carrot juice, okay? For sure not. Nobody was making carrot juice in those days, okay? We would be comfortable to say the bleas of stam yayin are lefkam into carrot juice. What? Because if the Gemara makes such a broad rule that a blea of stam yayin is lefkam into all liquids, I mean, you know, it wasn't like this after with the test tubes, and they figured it out. What about carrot juice and tomato juice and apple juice and grape juice? They didn't go figure everyone out, but it was sort of a certain understanding of how juices interact with each other, right? So they never saw carrot juice, but we would say the same thing for carrot juice. So we would say that. But this is not a regular presentation of wine and grape juice. This is something let's say I tell you that it's because grape juice and wine they spoil a certain amount, or they have a certain effect from the barrels affect them. Being absorbed into something affects them a certain way. Alcohol is not affected the same way. I'm not saying it's better or worse. It's not affected the same way. This is a higher concentration thing, and how it's affected is not necessarily the same. Let me say it to you a different way. Think about it like this now. Here's this will maybe help you understand it. When you make, we're going to get to this at the next stage, which is you age scotch. You age almost all alcohols, all whiskeys, in barrels. Scotch is aged in sherry casks. Okay? What is a sherry cask? A sherry cask is a cask that used to hold wine, and that is considered, we'll talk about it in a second, in some way to help out the taste of the scotch. The Gemara said that it's lefkam. The Gemara said that it makes it taste bad. What's going on here? What happened? The Gemara didn't make scotch? Right! Gemara didn't have to make scotch because there was no such thing as scotch because they didn't have to make distilled beverages. I mean, just we're talking about here a food that's different, not a little bit different. In fact, carrot juice is different than tomato juice. We're talking about bourbon is not anything like carrot juice. It has nothing to do with it. It's a different class. So we would have to, it's a little bit of a jump to say that just because the Gemara said it's lafgamet to all liquids, and with these new liquids that we have, to say that it also applies to those. And as an example, is that we have the sherry into scotch that is considered to give a good taste, or it's, at least it's not bad for it. Somehow it's beneficial. So I'm not completely closing the door to say that you can't say that the beer is all of gum, but it's not simple to say that. Okay, what I mean is like this: if we had a kli that was used for stam yayin and we wanted to use it for a liquid in a regular beverage, the Gemara says that it's mutter. We would be comfortable saying that. To say it with the whiskeys, it's not as simple because we're talking about not just a little bit different, a seemingly meaningfully different food, and we're not sure if we can apply.
Well, what's I mean, how do we apply that Gemara in general? Is the Gemara based on? Do we say today that the Gemara is just a straight definition of what the Metzius is? That wine that is absorbed into those barrels are by definition nois and tam livgam, regardless of what actually happens, or do we have to look at it on a different level today and say, well, maybe it's not livgam?
Okay, so
couldn't it be that it's just the metzias of the definition of how the Gemara tells us that's what it is, regardless of what actually happens?
Yes, but we're not taking the Gemara as a halacha Moshe Sinai. What it means is this: if the Gemara would tell us that Moshe Rabbeinu said that the bleed is of stam yayin or livgam, which could be, if the Gemara would say that, then we would say it's, we take it as this. Face, whatever it says, we take it as face value. We don't even think about it. The Gemara is just saying a practical thing. In their understanding, it's lefkam. Now, if we understood what bleas were, if we don't have a clue what most bleas are. Okay? Most bleas don't mean anything to us. If you use a pot and you make chicken soup in it today, and tomorrow you make spaghetti, I don't know. I never tasted chicken soup in my spaghetti. So I don't get what the Gemara is talking about, that the bleas go in. We don't understand what the Gemara is talking about. We're missing something. If we did understand, we would try to figure out what did the Gemara have in mind. Say, we understand bleas. So we got what they do. We understand what they were talking about. Let's see how we can apply it. And then we would think, well, maybe it does or it doesn't apply in case. After we understood the Gemara, we would be able to apply it or not apply it in different cases. But we don't understand it. And we don't get this whole thing. So we just take bleas, whatever they tell us, we open the books, and it says, there is a blea, there's not a blea. We just take it as that face value.
Well, that begs the question, are we mechliv to try to understand it?
Yeah, we are. But we bang into a brick wall. We don't know what to do. Did you ever taste chicken soup in your pasta? No, unless the pot was dirty. I mean, you never tasted it.
Still fresh.
Right, it is. So we follow the din. We say, if we would like to understand it. If we could understand it, we would. Yes, are we responsive? Yes, we should try to understand it. But once we bang into the brick wall and we can't understand it, so we're stuck. We just say, okay, too bad.
Since they're using those sherry casks intentionally.
Right, that's sort of like an indication to us that there must be something. Now, in wood, we understand bleas. Now, in wood, bleas is something that people get. That you could see bleas in wood, and in cheres, you could see it. In pots, we don't get it. Now, that's a whole different child. What should we do about bleas nowadays? It's its own child. It's its own interesting child. But for the simple answer is that we don't get it. And if we don't get it, we just take it, like you said, inflation's anyhow. Too bad on you, inflation's anyhow. So that's what we do. But that leaves us, in this case, it handicaps us because we don't know how to judge what should we do about these bleas for the stangayim. So I'm saying to you, if it was carrot juice, I would say whatever the Gemara says is probably true for carrot juice also, even though they never had carrot juice. But not having had whiskey, not having had a higher content alcoholic beverage is not the same. It's a different kind of food. Okay. So next, we move on to aging. Okay, we talked about it a little bit last week. I'll come back on that side. But aging is by far the most famous shiloh, okay, especially for scotch. Okay? Because most whiskeys are aged in ways that don't raise shilohs. Like, for example, bourbon. Excuse me. By tradition and by, I think even by statute, has to be aged in new oak casks. Has to be aged in a new cask. So they take a wood barrel, they age it. Kashrus wise, that doesn't pose shiloh. Pesach wise, it might, but kashrus wise doesn't pose a shiloh. So let's give me an excuse to tell you that whatever we're talking about today, and the last few weeks was not Pesach related. Pesach has its own special shiloh, so we're going to leave that on the side. But anyhow, so the the aging, and certainly, let's say, bourbon is done in just oak casks. Okay, no problem. Doesn't pose any issue. But the famous Shiloh is when you age scotch in sherry casks, you all heard the Shiloh. Anybody who's a drinker for sure has heard the Shiloh, that you age scotch in sherry casks. Sherry is a kind of wine. And so the age, though, the scotch in the sherry casks, does that pose a problem or not? Okay? Nowadays, actually, the Shiloh has become a little bit different. The Shiloh has become a little different, which is they have started, instead of using a sherry cask, means in Spain, they make sherry wine. Those casks, after they've been used for the wine, to age the wine, are then shipped to Scotland, and in Scotland, they would use them for making scotch. They've changed a little bit how they do business now, and now they often use regular casks, and they make them into sherry casks by themselves. They put the sherry in, they smear the sherry on the outside, they pour the sherry into the wine. They do other things to create sherry casks, even though they're not the traditional sherry casks like they used to be, which had really been used to hold sherry wine. Okay, there's other things, but the Shilohs are very similar.
What's the reason that they've changed the process? Is it because the Matthias says they can't find these sherry casks, they're too expensive, right, or is it because they get a better product and they do it this way?
Both. It has to do with business reasons with people. The sherry people stop doing them, the shipping issues. And as the business issues force them to start doing on their own, then they realized as they started doing that, hey, we can make better products, we can make cheaper products. That was sort of like a toitza of it. And then they decided they can make different products. Meaning, once, you know, if you make soft drinks, right, they keep pumping out new flavors. But if you're making scotch that's 15 years old, I'm like, what can I do? It is what it is. But they realized that they were called these finishings, they could start making all of a sudden differentiating. I have the same base product, and I can make it into four different varieties, and somehow that's, you know, desirable to people. Just like people weren't happy with just Coke and Sprite, they had to have 20 other choices, so. But now our shops can do that also. So that was like a toitza. Once they had to do this stuff, they realized they could use it to their advantage. Okay? So the aging, let's think of the different Shilohs that we have. The first, different possibilities to be made. The first was the Ramah says, we could be totally bedrabanan. Okay, the Ramah does not apply in this case. Okay, in the case of scotch, the standard in the industry is to use sherry casks. Okay, that's the standard. Almost everybody who makes scotch uses sherry at some point. Okay, they might use third run sherry casks at one point in their production. Hold on a second. But it's pretty standard in that industry to use sherry casks at some point in production, which makes it that we cannot use the Ramah who says you could be toilet that there's no Drabanan. Yes?
Well, the Ramah wrote that they were making scotch, right?
Yeah, for what? The Ramah's not talking about schnapps. The Ramah's talking about pickles. Okay, the Ramah's talking a rule about when you have a potential list of Drabanan, when can you and cannot be made? Okay, I give you a very short version. Okay, there's a shop that's this long about it. Okay, or when you apply it, it doesn't apply in this case. In a case where the industry standard is to use sherry casks at some point in the production, you're not allowed to be told that my guy didn't use sherry casks. Okay, you can't. You're not allowed to be told that. So the Ramah's out. Okay. What about bittul b'shisha? Should we say that the blias of stam yayin are bottle in six? Okay. Should we say that the amount of blias that's in there? What? So. Right. I'm going to get that in a second, which is like this. The simple understanding is, and I spoke about this a drop last week, is that the blias are bought to b'shisha. Okay? Even though the barrels are very thick, the amount of blias that's in there in din is considered a very small amount. The blias are probably are bought to b'shisha. Okay? However,
you mean as far as the calculations?
As far as calculations of how much blias there is, how much there is versus how much scotch there is, the blias is bought to b'shisha. It's hard for me to believe. I've gone through some of the math and some of the other scenarios, the guy's pouring it in and smearing it down. All these kind of cases are all, the way I can see, qualified for being bought the b'shisha. Okay. However, and here is an important shiloh that came up and a sort of a position that most hashgachas have taken, and you whether you know this or not, you probably subscribe to this, which is like this. In making scotch, I mentioned this last week, in making scotch, there are two shitas of how to use sherry. There are two opinions within the scotch makers how to use it. The bulk of the scotch makers say that the sherry is there only to counteract bad taste that would come to the scotch from the wood. Okay? The wood would give certain negative tastes, and the sherry counteracts those tastes. You don't need a lot of sherry. You don't need to use even first-run sherry casks. You can use, first-run means that it was only held this sherry, and then right to this thing. as opposed to second run means that it might have felt something in between. Okay, and third run, etc. You know, so you don't necessarily use it all the time. You know, little sherry. You don't need to use it so much of it. It doesn't get, then it's not going to give taste into it. It's to counteract the taste. And the, from my understanding, that the bulk of the Scotch makers follow that way of producing their stuff.
So that's still not
those kind of people are not the ones who are going to tell you, we use only first-run cherry casks. We have this great cherry taste to it. They're not the ones that when you pull open the bottle, okay, I'm not a drinker, but they're not the ones who when you pull open the bottle, say, ah, I can smell the sherry in this thing. Okay? They have a certain mahalo, and for those, seemingly, the din says they qualify to be, the sherry is Balta Bashisha, and people accept it, that the sherry is Balta Bashisha. There's another group, which is considered a minority in the people who make Scotch, who their in their impression is that the sherry is positive for the wine, for the whiskey. It's not just avoids a negative, it has its own special, it adds something special to the Scotch, which is good for it. And they will say, for example, they'll use only first-run sherry. They'll be into these extra finishings with lots of sherry added in, like they'll smear barrels and they'll pour it in, literally pour the stuff in, and they are very strongly promote the fact that their Scotch has such and such sherry flavor to it, okay? So what those people, probably by the letter of the law, the sherry is Balta Bashisha, okay? But one of the things that Moshe says, and Diane Weiss talks about this also, is if the person says that the wine is to make the thing taste better, this is what you had said, to make it taste better, I think it's going to add to it, that doesn't qualify for Balta Bashisha. Okay? And that's a machlokes machronim, whether it does or does not apply for bit of bashisha. Ramosha says he doesn't understand why that should be true, but Diane Weiss does hold of it. And what happened is that just about anybody who creates a list, like this here, who creates a list of which scotches are mutter, will not include those. Okay? Those ones who are being, who hold the bad position. And it's easy to find them because they're very proud of it and they'll let you know about it because that's, in their mind, that's what's making their product a good product. Okay? As opposed to they think the other guys are not making the right product. These people will promote it, and people will do it, first of all, because in din, there are those who hold that
even such... Even though they, theoretically, both of them can be putting in the same exact amount of sherry into their scotch.
In theory,
well, let me one say. Holds that it's, you know, not negating, it's keeping the scotch good, and, you know, not... spoiling, and the other one say, no, we're enhancing our scotch.
Let me rephrase.
You're more or less saying the same thing.
Let me rephrase your question.
The scotch is coming out of the taste.
Let me rephrase your question. I'm going to rephrase this question. The people of these two positions both use a certain amount of sherry, and both use sherry in a way that's part of the shisha. They don't use the same amount of sherry, but they both use sherry from a halachic perspective, that's under the line of Balta Bashisha. Okay, they don't use the same amount, but from our perspective, they haven't yet crossed the line. The guys who are big believers don't put in 20% sherry. Okay, let's not kid ourselves. They're not putting it to stop the scotch. It has a certain amount, 1%, 0.5%, 2%, I mean, how much does it have already in it? It doesn't cross the line of Balta Bashisha. Okay, so from a halachic perspective, they're both in the same band, you know, they're within from zero to shisha. They're not shishim, but they're from shisha, from zero to shisha. So they're both in the same band. So why do I care whether I use a little bit more and you use a little bit less if in din they're both on the same level, and in that level, that's bottle. Okay. So, okay, I'm agree with you that from most people that's correct. There are those who say no. If you bedafka want to taste good, then it's not going to be about the bashisha. Bashisha only works when it's just there for some reason. If you're doing it on purpose because you think it makes it taste good, it's not about the. I'm talking about Ramosh says he doesn't know why they hold like that. Ramosh says he doesn't know why people hold like that. What's happened is, between the fact that some place can say that you can't use bashisha in that case, and with the understanding that what kind of thing is this to say? When a guy says, listen, I'm going to tell you what the bottle says. The bottle says, this scotch made with the finest water, blah, 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 and which contains trace ingredients, okay, is made the same way since 1846, and it's there for whatever it is. Okay? So, does it seem appropriate, if you have a choice, and we're not starving on a desert island someplace, if you have a choice, a guy says, and I proudly tell you that I use trace ingredients, So some people follow them and say, how can I tell you to drink that one? Why don't you drink the other one? That's so prominent to tell you, and I include trade ingredients in my thing. That's a fine point. I'm not telling you that it's necessarily correct. I'm telling you is that the bulk of almost everybody who talks about the Shiloh, who have taken positions, whose hashkachos who take it, if you go to a wedding and they say, these are the scotches you're allowed to use at the wedding, will not include those, first of all, because some people didn't hold it's not good, and because some people are just bothered by it just gives a bad taste in their mouth to say, the guy has in the bottle, I have trade ingredients in here, and you should be serving that. Okay? But I'm telling you is that even if that having been said, it's not clear that in din it really makes a difference. Okay? In din, they are both in the same band, which is their bat b'shisha. Okay? The amount that's in there is an amount that would be bat b'shisha. So there's really is basis for drinking it. But I tell you, Rav Moshe says, even though it's bat b'shisha, he won't drink the stuff. Bal nefesh, he says, shouldn't drink it.
He does drink it.
Right, so he says the Baal Nefesh should preferably not. So we're holding by a food. So what we have is, listen,
right?
We have a food that in din is probably is motivated to drink. Ramosha, like you said, Ramosha said he would drink. Now Ramosha wasn't talking about this case. Ramosha's case is not scotch. Even though Ramosha's truth is always used in describing it, Ramosha's a drop of a different case. And we'll get to Ramosha's case in a second. Ramosha's case is a little bit of a different case, but you're correct. You're correcting how you're looking at it, which is in din. The baseline then is it's probably mutter. At the same time, what Ramosha says that a Baal Nefesh shouldn't have it is saying, come on guys, if there's 10 scotches in the store, why are you picking this one? Why don't you pick that one that has less shilas to it, less of a question? That's what we're holding. Okay?
Because it tastes better.
Because it tastes, you mean because you like the trade ingredients in it?
That's what I'm saying.
Right, which is funny because Bita B'Shisha is an interesting din because we know that till Shishim, you can often taste it. Not always, but basically you can taste it. And Bita B'Shisha means that you're going to taste it. In the example I gave before, you put grape juice into your seltzer, it's going to taste like grape juice. That's why you put it in. Even though it's only a tenth of the thing, it's going to taste like it. That's why you put it in there. But in din, that's bottle. That could be. So it's a funny, it's an unusual case where something is bottle, but yet it tastes like that in here. Okay, so that's so you said it tastes good. So, but you also hear the point is like, so is that what you want? You want to taste the stam yahin? So somehow that points can take that in a way that's not so. They say, come on, take them. Okay, I think
we're... That's why, because it's just like, you know, they can't fathom a concept where we would be allowed to do something which might actually give an to the person, even though it's completely mutter.
Okay.
It's just, you know...
Okay, so I'm...
Well, the Maisa, that's what Shmuel's saying, is that if it's mutter, it's mutter.
Yes, so I'm... Okay, now, it's mutter, I repeat, that there are people who say, no, it's not mutter. Ramosha says he doesn't get it. He said that part of this thing is like, if you put it on purpose, why does it make a difference?
My case, it was just the way they think. One distillery thinks that they're going on what they believe it is.
They don't do the same things. I don't think it's correct to say that they do the same thing as the other.
You know, if you add sugar to make the coffee sweet or to take the bitterness out of it. So that's the difference. Whatever it is, you're getting to the same point.
So what I'm just disagreeing is that it's true in a sense, but they don't do the same things. I mean, they will in fact have much more sugar.
He puts a lot more sugar in it because he wants it not to be sweet.
Right. So in the levels, they're doing the same thing. I mean, they're not crossing on to shisha, but they are doing more. For example, the people who use only first one cherry, they're doing something that's different than the other people. We didn't talk about this, but you know, if you don't use first run sherry casks, it may be that the casks are mutter. There's a way to kash your casks, and if you use only not first run sherry, you might have kashed your casks in the process before you got it to be a not even run. They may have kashed it. So it's not to say they aren't doing things that might make a difference in din. They may have kashed their casks. There might be bit of beroyed on their casks. There's other things to talk about, but in at the baseline, you're correct. They're both in the same bin, but I would just disagree. They're not doing the same thing. In a certain way, they're doing the same thing. Okay.
Well, where's the idea of Nosen Tam L'Shvach fit here, though? In other words, if they're injecting this sherry into their, and it's still Baal Tam L'Shisha, right? But if it is Nosen Tam L'Shvach, shouldn't it still be Usher?
Why should it be Usher if it's Nosen Tam L'Shvach?
Because even when you have something that's Baal Tam L'Shisha, if it's Nosen Tam L'Shvach, it still doesn't work.
No, that's not correct. Nosen Tam L'Shvach is, I'm going to tell you what you're trying to say. I'm trying to get you to say this.
Okay.
Nosen Tam L'Shvach is that this thing is usher as long as it's Nosen Tam. And there's a condition, if it's Nosen Tam, but that Tam is Lufgam, it's not usher. This food is not usher until it's Nosen Tam. We didn't get the first base. This food is bottled even if it is Nosen Tam. It's Bottle B'Shisha. I mean, it's Bottle, even if it is nice and down. I don't care if it's nice down or Shvach. It could be Bottle even if it's nice and down. Who cares? If I have a Hadas, and I don't know if it's kosher, and this rules a bit of a rut, do I care if this Hadas makes that Hadas taste good? Who cares? I'm making a lulav. I'm not trying to make something taste good. But you only follow the rules of Shishim and taste when you're talking about certain kinds of foods. So Stam Yain is a special example of a food item, but it doesn't follow the rules of nice and tam. It has nothing to do with tam. It has to do with a different set of rules called Shisha. It doesn't follow the rules of tam. It's like if you're Yischach, Yischach kosher is button, Yischach posel is button, Yischach kosher. Do I care if the maple tree makes my bamboo rods taste good? Who cares? What if maple? We're not talking about tam. I don't care if maple into bamboo tastes good. It has nothing to do with it. We're not talking about tam. We're talking about that's the rules of the world. Right? It's a matter of follows the rules of the world. It's especially by foods that we have bitter b'shishim. Okay? And here, but this is an exception. This is a food that does not follow shishim.
Well, it's not the getter food.
It has its own set of rules. Shisha, not shishim. It's a different set of rules. Okay. Our last two. Blending. Okay, blending. Okay. Here, in blending, earlier we had sort of ignored, in mash, we sort of discounted the idea that they might use stam yayin in the mash itself, okay? But in this case, in the blending, it is a more of a real possibility, in one of two ways. People who make whiskey, in many cases, depending on how what they call their whiskey, are allowed to put in what we call grain-neutral spirits, just pure alcohol into the thing. Okay, depending on how they label it and what it's called, blah, 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 they're allowed to put in just plain old alcohol. Okay? That means they go out to the market and they buy plain old alcohol in a drum or in a truck and they put it in.
Which is vodka.
Excuse me?
That's vodka. Yeah.
They're putting in vodka. They're basically, well, vodka is watered down. But they're basically putting that in. Right? They're putting in, they can put in many cases, plain old whiskey, alcohol into their product. I'm going to tell you the second one, let's do this one first. So, in that case, shouldn't be choshish that the alcohol that they're buying is grape-based or milk-based. Shouldn't be choshish that. So, let's talk about the stages over here. In practice, such alcohol does exist on the market. It really does. New Zealand and Ireland make milk-based alcohol, which is called lactose-based alcohol. France, every couple of years, ends up making grape-based alcohol, and it goes on to the market. It's out there, okay? The Rama is cooler to say that we could be tiled with the Rabbanan and assume that these are only Sun Rabbanan. The grape and the milk, I know milk is also is milk that's midraisa, but in this case it's only milk that's midrabbanan. And it may have stam yayin, and it may have gvinas akum, which is also only midrabbanan. So the Rama would say you could be tiled with the Rabbanan. Okay? You could be assumed that it's not there. Okay? In the food that you eat, the hashgachos do not follow that. When they see alcohol, they assume that it needs hashgachon. Okay, because of the possibility that really has this trait into it, whether you, Rav Moshe says, because a Baal Nefesh should be makbel on that. Okay, so can I tell you shouldn't be choshesh? I don't know. That's a question. Whether you should be choshesh that they put in there. It's again in din. The Rama says you don't have to be choshesh, but there would be reason to think that maybe it should be in there. But now there's a second way that it comes in, not just directly. They just literally pour the stuff in. There's another thing which is called a blender. Okay, which I mentioned this last week, which is that companies pay a very high tax on beverage alcohol. And the government says if you want to put in flavor into your product, products that are allowed to be flavored, depending on how they're labeled, that are allowed to be flavored, you can put in a flavor, that's okay. And if that flavor happens to have some alcohol in it, that's okay. That's not considered beverage alcohol. That's considered a flavor. So that's okay. You're allowed to put in flavor that has flavor, even if it has some happens to have some alcohol mixed into it. So people take advantage of this. And what they do is they put in 2.5%. You're up to 2.5%. 2.5% alcohol, but they put flavor into that alcohol so they can say, I'm putting in flavor, I'm not putting in alcohol. Really, they're putting in alcohol. They're trying to save money by putting in alcohol. But they're saying is, I'm putting in flavor. You see, it has a certain flavor to it. I'm putting flavor in, and so, but they're really, does that make sense to you? Okay. It only makes sense if you're used to the IRS. Okay, that makes sense. You know, I'm putting in alcohol, but I'm telling you I'm putting in flavor because that helps me save. I don't have to pay taxes on the alcohol, so that's how it works. Okay, so that alcohol has the same shiloh to it. That alcohol that they're putting in has the same shiloh. It's not being put in as just plain old alcohol, but it's being put in as, it's called a blender. It's a way to put it in to get your free alcohol or tax-free alcohol by calling it a flavor. Okay, does that make sense to you? It doesn't. But that's it's lamaisa. That people do that. Okay? It is done.
So it has to get the same title on the alcohol and the rosé. Now, we have a different question. Okay, let me back up. This is the case that Ramosha was talking about when he talked about bitter b'shisha. Ramosha describes that people make whiskey and they put in 2.5% alcohol. He doesn't say this whole thing about the IRS. He didn't give us that whole spiel, but that's clearly what he was talking about, that kind of a situation. He said they put in 2.5% alcohol. Why is somebody doing that? And this is what's going on. Okay, Ramosha's talking about whether that's what's or not. And this is the case. Ramosha said it would be bitter b'shisha. You could make title of the Rabbanan that they're not using trace alcohol, but Baal Nefesh shouldn't do it. Okay, so what am I saying? Okay, it's Mutar Din. It's Mutar Din. If a person had a preference, they wouldn't use it. Okay, but now from a different side of this. I just told you they put in, this blender has to have flavor mixed into it. Okay, by law, it has to have flavor mixed into it, because remember, I'm trying to put in flavor. The alcohol is for pretend, not what I'm trying to do. So I have to have flavor into it. Well, once I have to put in flavor, so then the people say, well, I might as well put in a good flavor. I might as well. And in fact, the people make these blender flavors, make blender flavors for rum, blender flavors for bourbon, blender flavors for this, because you might as well sort of get it while you're at it. Okay? That brings us to the other rule we mentioned, which was, something that's bottled b'shisha, like a flavor, is not bottled if it's avid l'taima. It's not bottled if it gives taste. And for that reason, cherry vodka needs half hashkacha on it. Because the cherry flavor that's in there might be treif. It could be nois and tam in a way, and the cherry is very prominent in the food. That's what's called cherry vodka. It's vodka with a cherry taste. Okay, when I say, if I can clarify something I said last week, I'll say it again, which is cherry liquor and cherry flavored liquor are not the same thing. Cherry liquor cherry brandy is liquor made out of cherries. That was the mash was from a cherry. Cherry flavored whiskey is not. It's a whiskey made out of who knows what, with cherry flavor mixed into it. Okay, now that cherry flavor gives us some kind of a cherry taste to it. That's the point of it. And it might not be kosher. You can't use it without hashbacha. Okay, you have spiced rum. It's rum that has a flavor into it. No, you can't use that unless it's hashbacha. Because the flavoring that's in there is meant to give it a certain taste. But what about in the blender? What about the flavor that's in the blender? But the blender has to have a flavor in it. Legally, it has to have it. So in that case, that flavor is assumed to fall into a different rule called Zev Zagar. The flavor that's in there is not meant to give an unusual taste to this rum. It's meant to round out the taste that the rum has. It's meant to complement the taste that's already there. Okay, that kind of a taste is not enough to asher a food. Okay? It mixes in with the taste that's already there. That's both. Okay, if it'll make it feel good, because connected to our first year, people also put glycerin in. Whiskey also, okay. They do put. There's such a thing at this stage, at the blending stage. People put in glycerin in, make you all feel good. It's a smoothness, rounds out smoothness to the thing. So the good news is that Ramosha talks about this also. That the glycerin is put in very very tiny percentages. Glycerin is not a milsadavidol timer. Ramosha says that, and we would understand that. So the glycerin is bottled. Okay, we don't worry, glycerin is not a, yes.
But was it the fats from the glycerin that was the problem that we talked about?
Glycerin is a product of fat. It's made from fat.
But it's that E-shaped.
Yes, correct.
But the things that come off the E-shape, they're the glycerin itself isn't usually a problem, it's the things coming off of the glycerin.
No. What it is that a fat or an oil has the E-shaped part, that's the glycerin, and these other, the wavy lines that come
right,
off.
Right.
Okay. If it comes from animal fat, then it's treif. And glycerin could come from animal fat, from vegetable oil, or mixed. It could come from vegetable oil made on kale with animal fat. So the glycerin would be treif, but the glycerin is in tiny, tiny amounts. They're mamish in tiny amounts. I looked at something this morning and it was, I think, 0.3%, okay, which is tiny, way bottled. Okay? So we're going to ignore that. Just make you feel good. Just throw it in there. Okay? And the last is, Baruch Hashem, we're well over time. Baruch Hashem, the bottling, which... For most purposes, I'm not going to give you details on it. For most cases, we ignore shilas about bottling. There are shilas on bottling. Okay, the way they bottle, it's usually bottled cold, but because schnapps is a double harif, it has potential problems to it. Okay, we're going to, for whatever reasons, we're going to usually ignore the shilas. What's negated, I'm just going to mention it negated to, is that beer is, it's bottled cold, but it is pasteurized, it is heated after it's bottled. Okay, you can't, if you bottle beer hot, you won't have any bubbles left. Okay, but because the carbon dioxide stays in only when it's cold. But so you bottle it cold and then you heat it afterwards. beer does, because that does have trials on it, because of the way, when it's, there are other things, beer companies make other things that are, that have time in it that could make it beer trade. So beer has trials. Most other whiskeys are made cold, all whiskeys are bottled cold. There are potential trials because of the double hard. We're going to basically ignore them.